This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On tonight's program, Richard Mabian hosts Zach Pistora, the Kansas Sierra Club's legislative director, who's here to bring us up to speed on environmental issues in the Kansas legislature. But first, I'm Natural E with your headline news. EcoWatch.com reports, a huge wildfire burning since Friday in the Santa Clarita Valley area north of Los Angeles has tripled in size over the weekend to 33,172 acres, destroying at least 18 homes and leaving one man dead. More than 1,500 homes have been evacuated as 1,673 firefighters battle the sand fire. So far, they have managed to contain only 10% of the fire. Los Angeles County Deputy Fire Chief John Tripp warned that up to 45,000 homes could be evacuated if the fire is not contained. Another wildfire has burned more than 10,000 acres near Big Sur in central California. Extreme heat and years of ongoing drought, both linked to climate change, are increasing wildfire risk in California, and 10 of the state's 20 largest wildfires on record have all burned in the last 10 years. Fusion.net reports, while much of the United States braces for a weekend defined by a suffocating heat dome, a hemisphere away, the weather is making these 100-degree days look downright pleasant in comparison. According to Jeff Masters at Wonderblog, on Thursday, the Eastern Hemisphere may have set at all-time high when a city in Kuwait hit an astonishing 129.2 degrees Fahrenheit. Wonderground's weather historian Christopher Burt told Masters that if verified, quote, this would be Earth's hottest temperature ever reliably measured outside of Death Valley, California, end quote. According to Burt, the highest reliably recorded temperature at Death Valley was 129.2 Fahrenheit reading on June 30th, 2013, tied with Thursday's measurement in Kuwait. Death Valley has hit 129 degrees Fahrenheit four other times, all in the month of July, in 1960, 1998, 2005, and 2007. Masters said that considering the incredible heat surrounding the city of Mitraba, Kuwait, on Thursday, such as the all-time heat record of 128 degrees Fahrenheit at Basra, Iraq, the Kuwait temperature will likely be verified. These extreme heat waves in the United States and the Middle East are just the most recent headlines in a year that's been chock full of baking temperatures. As NASA recently verified, a record-setting June prolonged a 13-month global heat wave. The first 6 months of this year have been the hottest ever recorded. KRCGTV.com reports, Senator Roy Blunt now has an unwanted award added to his collection. Representatives of several organizations and Columbia community members gave Missouri's Republican senator the first annual Do Your Job trophy. Blunt opponents are saying their trophy represents Blunt's role in delaying the confirmation process of a Supreme Court nominee. Protesters now want President Obama's nomination Merrick Garland to get a congressional hearing after the death of Justice Antonin Scalia. A representative of Senator Blunt's Columbia office accepted the mock trophy and told protesters that Blunt would receive their message. Blunt is saying the next president should choose Justice Scalia's replacement on the Supreme Court bench. ENN.com reports, the global economy is becoming less energy intensive, using fewer fossil fuels to power productivity and economic growth, according to new data from the U.S. Department of Energy. Global energy intensity, a measure of energy consumption per unit of gross domestic product, has decreased nearly one-third since 1990, the agency said. The U.S., for example, burned 5,900 British thermal units per dollar of GDP in 2015, compared to 6,600 BTUs in 2010. China burned 7,200 BTUs per dollar in 2015 versus 8,300 BTUs in 2010. The Department of Energy says the decrease is the result of the growth in low-carbon energy sources, such as wind and solar, and improved energy efficiency. And finally, GreenAbilityMagazine.com reports, a new KCP&L solar facility will generate electricity to 440 homes from 11,500 ground-mount solar panels on a 12-acre site in Greenwood, Missouri, about 30 miles southeast of Kansas City. This is the electric utility's first solar power facility, and it is almost 100 times larger than the KCP&L solar array many Kansas Cityans have seen at Kauffman Stadium. The system, which was constructed by Sungevity, will produce 4,700 megawatts megawatt hours of electricity annually. KCP&L's first solar facility is located at Greenwood Energy Center, a natural gas power plant that is used when electricity is at peak demand. Earlier this year, KCP&L announced an additional 500 megawatts of wind power and new energy efficiency programs for its Missouri customers. Missouri has renewable portfolio standards that require utilities operating in the state to generate a specified percentage of its energy from renewable sources like solar. KCP&L reports that these projects put the utility ahead of RPS compliance dates and percentages in Missouri. And now I'd like to turn the mic over to Mr. Richard Mabian.
Thank you, Naturally. It's good to see you back.
And thanks, Richard.
See you. You look the better for whatever it is you enjoyed yourself doing. I'm glad you're here.
Glad to be here.
All right, gang, here I am. Hello, everybody. This is Richard Mabian. For those of you out there who don't know who I am by my voice, and I'm glad to be here also. Even though those heat temperatures that you were just talking about naturally or has made life nearly unbearable here in Kansas City, I know for a fact. Just talking to people, it's those of us who go out in the early mornings, by the time we try to get things done around noon so we can get back out of the heat. I didn't make it on some days, and around noon it would just be smoking hot. I mean, when you stand by your car, you could feel the heat coming off of your car. And I mean, not from running, just from sitting out there in the sun. I mean, unbelievable. I came out of church yesterday. You know, church members like to sit around and talk and blah, 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 blah. Man, we couldn't stand outside. It was just too hot, entirely too hot. So my statement for this type of weather to all of you that are listening to my voice, each and every one of us know where our elderly population live. We all know the elderly. Make sure you check on them. There's one thing about Americans, especially our elder post-World War II generation, they possess a kind of pride that don't make them want to make people think they need help. They don't want to be a bother. Check on them. Check on your relatives. Check on your parents. Check on your elderly neighbors. Grab a bottle of water and take it to them. You know, these people are living on fixed incomes, and utilities are killing them, just trying to keep their houses cool. They living in some folks, you know, especially us inner city folks, you know, we got people living in homes with bars on their windows. I mean, they boarded themselves up in them houses to protect the enemies outside the houses. Now they're in a situation where they need to be able to get some air or something going through them homes. All I can ask you to do is to make sure you check on the elderly. Okay, that's my prayer for everybody today. I got my favorite person here, Zach. Zach, say hello to folks.
Hey, Richard, good to be back with you.
I know it is. Zach and I, we have some unbelievable conversations on the phone, in person. He's been with me now since about 4 o'clock this afternoon, so we didn't talk to each other's ears off. The last 2 hours, we still haven't reached a point where we're able to solve the problems of the world, but at least we're able to get them problems out on the table. So here's what we're going to do. As usual, he's going to come in and talk to us about hot-button items, things we need to consider, things we need to look at. So, Zach, I'm going to turn it over to you, and I'll just interject my comments when I see a way to sneak it in.
Sure. Richard, always a pleasure to be with you in valuable conversations. I think we're getting close.
We're getting close.
We're getting close to solving.
Yes, we're getting close.
In our off season with the Kansas legislature, they primarily go from start of January to the end of May. They recently just went back for a special session on trying to get keep the schools open.
Right.
So we're glad they did that. Because wouldn't that be a nightmare?
Did they have some extra on that bill besides schools being open?
Primarily, that was the main focus of the special session.
They didn't have no underwater toilet seats in there and that like that.
As far as I know, that's what I was paying attention to. I just thought it was interesting that they decided to come back for a special session to work on the schools.
Yeah,
when they could have been working on that the whole way through. But I'm just an outsider on some of the education issues. But I was glad they were able to keep the schools open. But now we kind of turn our focus to the elections.
Okay.
And the campaigns. You've probably seen the signs out there on the corner with the names telling you who you vote for. So we're keeping a close eye on that with the Kansas Sierra Club and want to try to make it easier for folks to know who our environmental champions are and what kind of votes that the folks have been in office made on key environmental issues, whether it's supporting the Keystone XL pipeline or keeping our renewable portfolio standards for renewable energy, benchmark goals to keep us going with renewable energy in our state, to action on water. So there's a variety of topics that we've tried to identify, and we're formulating a legislative scorecard, we call it, where you'll be able to see, we'll release it to the public, you'll be able to see what key votes were made and how the legislators fare on supporting environmental issues. And that'll be a good tool for when if environmental issue is important to you, and it should be to everybody out there, because as we heard, it's affecting us not only here in the States, but our world, locally with the heat.
Right.
So it's an important issue to be taken care of.
Now, I want to interject this one in places where I sneak in.
Sir.
Because I am thoroughly convinced, especially in urban America, that the population is practically clueless about the environment. I mean, the people who know about the environment is like the choir. We're preaching to the choir. They know about it, and so we will always talk to you all. That's our commitment. But I want us to start focusing in on the fact that the population in general is clueless.
Yeah.
And when you talk about this sheet you put together, we're going to find a way to make this sheet available to everyone. I want you to embrace it. I want you to read it, learn it, and share it. Because I think it does a pretty daggum good job of, one, laying out the issues. Then people can stop and see how our legislators vote on these issues to start getting an understanding of what we're dealing with as a state.
Right. Okay? Yep, that's a good point. And part of me thinks that the general population isn't absolutely clueless.
Right.
You know, I think folks realize that air and water are pretty important, and access to green lands. You know, when Flint, Michigan happened, I mean, that was prime time news.
Okay.
And that was an issue in front of everybody's minds. And there should be no reason why our kids and general population should have bad water that's contaminated.
And I agree with you, and this is where I go with that. Yes, issue oriented. Mm. They will know about it if it's an issue. But it's not the issues that I personally am wanting people to embrace. I'm wanting people to embrace that we have an environmental problem in this country. But like you said, the Flint issue, it happened because the people themselves were totally clueless when it came to water. I mean, they did it for a year and a half and it was nasty water. I mean, you would think that if they were on top of it, they would have stopped somewhere along the way and said, hey, this water don't look right. Now, the reason I'm saying that should have been enough to make people become conscious of environmental stuff. Okay? Even though it happened in Flint, but around the country, it should have made people become aware of environmental stuff. Okay, Kansas City metropolitan area is getting 2 Amazon plants. How gonna hire 1,000 people each? One of them in Edgerton, the other one in Wyandotte County. Everybody's excited. What are they talking about? Oh, 1,000 jobs. And the public is totally clueless on the fact that those trucks run on diesel emission.
And a lot of trucks.
And this program alone, I know I do it all the time, has said that the guesstimated number and the increase of truck traffic in the Kansas City metropolitan area is anywhere from 20 to 30,000 trucks a day. You would think if, like Flint, they learned something, as soon as they heard that, the first thing they thought, that means trucks going to be rolling through our neighborhoods. Okay, so I'm sorry. I have to throw that out. We need to make sure that we are impressing that upon the public that we're talking to you on the phone. It's easy to think because the people you around know about the environment. They actually drive Priuses and you know, and drink water out of them fancy cups, the fancy water containers. Right. They sell them all over town now. My good friend Leticia got me running around with one. So I'm saying, yes, but at the same time, we need to know that we need to become conduits for the rest of the population so that they also will become aware, because then when we look at this list of what's happening in the election, it'll have more meaning.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And for these issues to become at the forefront of people's minds, right, that the months this year have been the hottest ever. I don't think people are talking about that. They're talking about how hot it is, but that this is very unusual compared to our human history,
yes,
kind of thing.
Well, I didn't know that we had 129 degrees in Death Valley two or three times in the recent future. I started going, I wonder why they call that Death Valley. I mean, that is unbelievable. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead, man. I'm sorry. I can't keep my mouth shut.
I mean, these are very a here and now thing.
Yes.
And I know there's a lot of important issues to be concerned with going on in America right now.
Right.
And you hear a lot of talk about them, especially on the national media. But we cannot forget about the environment.
Right.
As so much of our life depends on where we're at. With what we depend on, air, water, land. And yeah, so we can't remove ourselves from our place in nature. I just want to emphasize that, and that we need action.
Right.
If these are problems and we're suffering, Kansas in the last 6 years have been part of 25 separate billion-dollar-related disasters. Now, those billion-dollar-related disasters haven't just happened in Kansas, but regionally, when we talk about droughts,
yep,
talk about flooding in the eastern side of the state, talk about severe storms, tornadoes that wipe out communities, that costs money,
yep,
and people have to pay for that. Those are all really important to keep in mind, that this is climate change isn't something we have to deal with at 2050. It will be. But we need to take steps to deal with it right now because it's affecting us right now.
All right, I'm going to go into those areas, air, water, and the other one you mentioned.
Yeah.
But before we go, talk to everyone about what the Democratic Party added to their platform.
Yeah.
I think that's important.
Yeah, it's exciting. Recently at the Democratic National Convention kind of organization where they're talking about their platform in,
right,
Orlando. And of course, they're doing their convention for the public in Philadelphia right now. But they came up with a climate mobilization platform. Climate mobilization platform. Democrats have taken it upon themselves to make this a central issue that they're going to stand behind. And they call it the Green Industrial Revolution.
Hmm.
Recognize the need that at this point, our nation needs to take leadership as a lot like it did in World War II. And establish peace across the world. We need to establish some leadership on the environment because that affects our global stability. Talking about refugees moving from one place to another, violence over precious resources like water. So they're helping to chart a course from the Democrats. So that's a very positive step.
Yeah.
You know, we're also seeing a step in the other direction from the Republican Party in saying that climate's not a real issue,
right,
that climate change is something we're not so sure the science is clear on, And so without making a partisan effort, because we're going to need everybody to be involved
in doing it.
Right.
Now, since we're going to stop. Let's take a break, and then I'm going to come back in, and I'm going to pick up right from that point. We'll be right back, folks.
You can honor the legacy of Richard Tripp of Care of Poor People and save a life in the process. Here's how.
It's called Luggage Jug. First, fill up a clean jug or plastic bottle with water, then freeze it overnight, and finally, take it with you as you go about your normal business. When you see a homeless person, let them have the jug. It's a simple way to help folks get through this extreme heat. This message is a public service announcement of 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. As the climate changes and droughts become more common, water conservation will become critical. And chances are you're using a lot more water than you think you are. Peter Hanlon of the Grace Communications Foundation says many people believe they use between 50 to 100 gallons of water each day.
Which isn't that far off if we're talking about direct water use.
But the water out of our tap is just a tiny fraction of the water we use. When we add in the water used to produce the food we eat, fuel we burn, and products we buy, the total goes way up.
We're talking average somewhere around 2,000 gallons a day.
So to help us better understand how much water we really use, Hanlon created an online water footprint calculator. This simple tool asks a series of questions, like how many miles do you drive, and how often do you eat meat? And then estimates how much water you're really using. And most of that water is not coming from your local environment. Instead, it's coming from all over the world, including places experiencing droughts.
We have to think beyond just what's coming out of our tap and think of water as kind of a universal resource.
You can figure out how much water you're using at watercalculator.org. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
All righty, I'm back again, and what I'm going to do before I get started is two things. One, mention the fact, exactly, name up to speak to your position that you have at the legislature.
Yeah, I'm the legislative director and state lobbyist for the Kansas Sierra Club, and this was my fifth year.
Fifth year doing it, so he's got some history behind it now. He's experienced in what he's doing. And I'm going to give out the number here just in case anybody out there decided they wanted to call in and engage in any of these subjects that we're talking about. That's 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. I wanted to pick up on the point when you were talking about the platform. And the reason I'm doing this is I want you to explain what being part of the platform means. And the reason I'm saying that, it's obvious that there may be people in the audience out here that don't even know what we're talking about when we talk about the platform. I know Wyandotte County has a 11% voting average, and they were higher than other places. And I know that you was mentioning somewhere with the millennials or something like what? What was the figure?
Right. If you're under 30, the 18 to 30-year-olds vote often 3 out of 10 times.
Three
people out of 10 people actually vote.
Actually vote. So that's 7 people that's not vote. We got a call. Caller, are you on the air? Will you tell us your first name and what part of the city you're calling from, please?
My name's Richard, and I'm calling from Olathe.
All right, Richard, what can we do for you?
I listened to your program, and I'm very pleased to hear everything you said. It's been very informative. I have a little bit of personal story to add to your situation about the climate change and the heat and everything like that. I'm a Alaskan native.
Okay.
I have family in Alaska, and the last time I was up there was in 2005. And my relatives up there, they live what's called a subsistence lifestyle. They hunt on the land, and they fish on the river.
Okay.
And they were telling me the big changes in with the temperature, that the fishing has changed, the hunting has changed, the amount of snow that they receive each year has been reduced. The rivers usually freeze over in the wintertime. Back many, many years ago, you was able to drive a dump truck full of gravel on top of the ice from one village to the next to deliver gravel for the landing strips. They can't do that anymore. And this last winter, one of my cousins was out on a snowmobile, and the river wasn't frozen solid enough. And his snowmobile fell through the ice. And luckily, he was rescued. And so there's a big change in the weather.
Okay.
I just talked to my cousin a few days ago, well, a little over a week ago. This year, the fishing is a little bit better. But the reason for that is that the water and the temperature in the ocean, the water is so much warmer. The fish are coming up the rivers because the water is cooler.
Okay.
And so they're catching more fish, which is a benefit to them. And it's the best fishing they've had in 6 years. But I thought that would give some perspective to your listeners about how climate change is just not something real recent. It's been happening, you know, like I say, when I was there in 2005. And it even happened, I had similar stories when I was there back in the middle 1990s.
Okay. Richard, so, I'm going to speak to you offline, but thank you for your call in and your comment. I really appreciate your work. And now this is what I want you to do, Richard. I hope you've hung up now so you can hear me. I want you to continue to listen to this show. And if no other time, when Zach and I are on, I try to bring Zach on at least once a month or so, I want you to call in and talk to your folks up there in Alaska and keep bringing us an update of what they see going on. Will you do that for us? Okay, sir. I appreciate it. Zach, go ahead.
Yeah, I appreciate the comment. And actually, I had the opportunity to go up to Alaska to check out some of the glaciers because they've been melting at a pretty alarming rate. But that's just something I heard, that the fishing kind of habits had changed and some of the things. But I've heard similar stories across the United States, whether, you know, we're talking about certain beetles don't die off in the wintertime because the winters are too warm, so they get more of the trees, you know. So there's a lot of different examples of how climate changes. It's very touchy thing. Our climate is a very sensitive thing. Our environment responds to it. And if we're manipulating it and we're getting the warmest weathers we had in recent times, it could change the ballgame more than we know.
Okay, Richard, I really appreciate you calling in. I want to go back to the platform. Explain what the platform actually means. And I think there was something added to it about the first 100 days or something.
Yeah, first 100 days, they're calling for significant action, policy action to help reverse some of the climate trends, bring down carbon reductions, trying to bring down our carbon footprint, produce more renewable energy items that'll try to change our course or current.
Now I want to get this. Now the platform is like a commitment that the Democratic Party is making to working in the climate change world. Is that right? In other words, it's part of the platform. That means it's going to be an active process that they're going to be involved in, right?
Right.
Okay, so here comes the 100 days.
You buy the product, that's the label.
So here comes the 100 days because, see, I know that there's a check and balance system for the first 100 days of anybody that's in office. So if they do what they say they're going to do, at the end of the first 100 days, there should be some evidence of them having made steps or strides in each one of those areas you just mentioned, right?
Right.
We're going to hold them to that, folks. We're going to check on it and see. Because a lot of times people sell that soap to you when they're trying to get in office, and then when you get in there, all of a sudden the soap is gone. So we're going to see how we as the public, even though we in Kansas, we're still part of the American public, can make sure or at least address to someone our concerns about them maintaining that platform. Okay? Now, I wanted to come back. I want to go through air, water, and what was the other one?
Land.
Land. Air, water, and land. Okay. Let's go air first. Where are we in Kansas with our concern for air?
Right. One of the big issues the Kansas Sierra Club is interested in trying to change is we've had a tradition of burning of the grasslands.
Yeah, Flint Hills.
Right. And the problem isn't so much the burning, because it's a kind of a natural thing, and we encourage that. It's the amount that we're doing. We burn pretty much the whole grasslands, privately owned, all at once in April. Okay. And it's a pretty amazing. You see pictures of it, and it's like everything's all on fire,
right,
that kind of thing. And what's happening is they're shutting down recess up in Nebraska because the kids can't go outside because the particulates are so bad. You're not supposed to be breathing there. And that's just amazing. We're not quite connecting the dots on our effect.
Right.
And that's a central – that's kind of like the core problem with our environmental crisis.
We're not connecting
the dots.
Go back to what I said about the lessons that you would have thought we learned with Flint. Now, if I'm up in Nebraska and they tell me my kid can't go outside because of some smoke that's being burned down in Kansas, don't you think I would have some concern about the air that we breathe? But it's not happening. It's not happening.
Right.
Okay.
So a simple fix that we offer is that we should burn maybe a third of that grassland,
right,
of your property every year and just rotate it.
Right.
So that's
you know
why.
What got me, made me, gave me an understanding on that was the prairie chickens, because when they go out and burn the whole land, the prairie chickens haven't got no place to run.
Right.
So if you burn one half of it, the prairie chickens can run through the half that's not burning, and then if you go back and burn the other half, they can run back through the half that's already burned.
Right.
I hadn't thought about that until I realized that if you go out there and burn it all at one time,
right,
they're dead.
They got
no place to go. Oh, man. Okay. Land. Let's go to land. Where are we with land?
Land. One of the issues we're working on with land is the issue of energy. And one of the big topics right now in Kansas, especially south central Kansas, is the issue of fracking. Hydraulic fracturing, horizontal drilling, it's a new way to get to natural gas and oil underneath the ground. And one problem other than taking up the water from underground, this is fresh water. Potable water we should be drinking, instead of using it for this industrial process of getting the energy out of the ground, oil out of the ground, but it gets contaminated, and then we can't use that water again. We're talking about using 4 million gallons of water per one fracking attempt. Okay, that's quite a bit of fresh water. We could use brackish water, gray water, some water that's not quite the same, that we can't necessarily rely on for drinking.
We can do that.
As far as I'm aware, we can do that. But it's just a lot easier to get the ground out, the water out of the ground, fresh water, so, or out of the lake. Right.
Yeah.
But one significant issue of this is it's caused a massive amount of earthquakes, south central Kansas. We went from not having very many earthquakes at all to being in the top five for states for earthquakes.
Yeah.
In Kansas, in Oklahoma. Yeah, they've actually had to redraw the geological maps to show the seismicity hazards for our area because we weren't on the map for earthquakes, and now we are in a big way. And the key thing, this is all man-made earthquakes. This is from injecting the waste back into the ground, and it causes a rupture within the plates, existing faults, and then we have an earthquake.
Here I come again.
And it's costing us.
Here I come again. The American public. I know you and I repeat this all the time. We talk about fracking all the time. You're talking about earthquakes. We talk about earthquakes. I know how much they've gone up in the last 4 or 5 years in the state of Kansas. But other than the Sierra Club and a few other environmental-minded people, no one's saying anything.
Yeah, but it's definitely costing. They should be talking about it.
Anything. It's amazing to me that you have people down there in Wichita whose home foundations are cracking because of fracking, because of the earthquake, and no one's saying anything. You would think, you know, you see them science fiction movies and stuff, you'd think somebody'd be going, hey, something's happening here in Kansas that, you know, we should be addressing, but nobody's saying
right.
Where. Okay, I'm sorry.
You're absolutely right, Richard, and we should be talking about it more, and they might be talking about it when they see a water main break you know, down the street from them. What happened there? Is the water? They didn't realize it was from.
Or the kid disappeared in the ground from an earthquake, and the head goes voop. Then maybe somebody will go, oh man, we got a problem. All right, I saved the best for last. Water.
Water. Yep. This is perhaps the most important environmental issue facing Kansas. It's a very real issue. We're talking about parts of western Kansas running out of water.
Okay.
Communities maybe have 20 years left of the water supply.
So when you say running out of water, just literally, what does that mean?
The groundwater that they rely on, that we're pumping out of the ground to through our wells to drink, to dry up. The pump won't work
because
the water's gone.
Same thing for farming. The aquifers, they'll be dried up.
That's what we're talking
aquifers,
about.
Aquifers, the underground source of water that farmers use to water their fields, right?
Right, right. At an unprecedented rate, we're taking water out of the ground to kind of water the corn and some of these water-intensive crops in a semi-arid climate. And we're taking more water out than it's being replenished. And it's just amazing at the rate we're taking the water out. And
so what kind of time do we have before we have this type of
They say if we don't change our ways, we'll probably have the aquifer around for another 50 years.
Okay, so.
And the governor, Governor Brownback, has taken it upon himself to make water a central issue, went around the state. A couple of years back to talk about with all sorts of communities about the problem of this water. Now, I appreciate his effort, but to put money where his mouth is the direction I'd like to go because in law it says we ought to transfer at least $6 million from the state general fund to the state water plan fund.
In law?
In law.
That means that it's already passed law.
Yeah, it's in statutes. It's on the books.
Okay.
The ink is dry.
Okay.
But in last, I can't remember how many years, I think about four years, he hasn't made that transfer. Okay.
So now do the legislators know that there is a law that's not being upheld?
Oh, yeah. It's discussed in the committee.
And there's some legal ramifications for failing to maintain a past statute?
You know, I'm not a lawyer, Richard, but I hang out with a lot of them. I say there's something called a writ of mandamus,
which is a
legal tool to hold public officials accountable to the law that they serve. I just don't understand why we got the supreme leader of our law, the governor of Kansas, not operating by the books. Now, I understand why. It's because we have a broken budget. We don't have a lot of money in the bank right now. But for a really important issue and a central issue to him, that would be a no-brainer to take that money out of the state general fund to the state water plan fund. $2 million of our lottery money is supposed to go over. I think maybe we got $800,000 of that $2 million. So just a little token of what we ought to have for an issue that's really important. So.
Well, you know,
and this isn't just a western Kansas issue.
Yeah,
this affects eastern Kansas
I
in that the reservoirs are getting filled up with sediment. We're seeing our lakes have algae blooms from polluted runoff from the fields. So
I know that the Arkansas River is just drying up. I've seen arbitrary the arteries of it that at one time was flourishing with water that are just now dried sand, dirt beds where the water is just dried up. Boy, I tell you, that has a frightening aspect to
right.
it. And we're talking 50 years. Okay, so, but I mean, in reality, we looking at about another 25 years before it starts to be rationing.
But we can take action right now. Oh, absolutely.
You're like that.
And we're going to need the generation that doesn't vote very much, that 3 out of 10.
Y'all be running around here, you can have water.
We need to get going on it.
Every other day. Every other day. You can have some water.
But, you know, I know it sounds tough and there's a lot of challenges that we face,
right.
But I can't tell you how big the opportunity can be.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to see the things like the platform change and hear the green industrial revolution, because there's opportunity where you talk about changing our methods, our making agriculture smarter with in terms of the water, creating green jobs.
Right.
You know, where people can get jobs and the new energy form, where they might live in 21st century with new forms of energy that their kids can have energy that doesn't pollute and doesn't use as much water, you know. So
I mean, in realistic, I'm going to take another break here on you, but what I want you to come back to answer is, if in fact, if we do this and we extend the period from 50 years to 75, we still got that pending doom somewhere down the line. Is that right? All right, we're going to take a break.
After the Harvest, a nonprofit volunteer hunger relief organization, is looking for volunteers to help pick fruits and vegetables to feed people in need. Call 816-921-1903 or go to our website, AfterTheHarvestKC.org, for more information. This message, a public service of 90.1 KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
It all comes out in the wash on this Current Cast.
It's really important that you think about how water quality will be impacted by what you use in your daily life.
That's Aislinn Gaucher of the John G. Shedd Aquarium in Chicago. She says when personal care products, harsh cleaning chemicals, or pesticides end up in the watershed, they can harm creatures that rely on good water quality to survive.
Those really delicate animals, like amphibians that breathe through their skin and are so connected to the water, are so susceptible to things like that.
So Gaucher suggests if you would not consume a product yourself, consider if and how you use it carefully. There are often less harmful alternatives so you can have a clean house and clean conscience. CurrentCast is produced in partnership with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
All right, I'm back again. I'm going to toss out this number one time. We're getting ready to go into our last portion of the show for about another 10 minutes here. Number is 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. I know I talked about extending the time if we go from 50 years to 75 years. So do we have to find other ways of creating water? I mean, especially water. Water's basic. Do we have other ways besides rain to create water?
Yeah, I think folks are trying to make this a technological advancement, if you will. You know, take ocean water, desalinate it, and turn it into fresh water. But that costs a lot to come up with those processes. It takes a lot of energy to do that.
But there is other ways of being able to get it
right.
done.
And with all these issues, I mean, we're going to have to really, it's not so much to recognize if the problem is there or not.
Right.
It's going to be how to fix it.
Well, I think that's the issue. And I'm going to hit this, and then I'm going to go to this thing about Kansas City Power and Light. I am thoroughly convinced. In fact, I talked to a nuclear physicist, a scientist, and we were talking about the diesel emission, and I was explaining to him that when I have those presentations with people, I mean, sometimes people go, well, am I supposed to be scared? And I'll go, no, it's not like it's something to be scared. It's a condition that we got to deal with. It's not going anywhere. We got diesel emission out here. And I said, so I start talking to him about taking steps to know when and where to do what and how. You know, if you're elderly, maybe if the peak is up during rush hour, that's not a time for you to be cutting your grass or that kind of thing. And he goes, but that's not right, because what the deal is that we as scientists need to start figuring out ways to solve these problems. And when he said that, it made me dawned on me that up to now, we've been using our scientists to prove to climate deniers that we have a problem. We have them real busy trying to prove that we have a problem. And now it's time for us to start dealing with scientists and what they do best when they get down in them garages and basements and come up with some kind of solution to make these problems go away. Just like you said about the fact they have a process for turning ocean water into drinkable water. Right now it's very expensive, and because that's, no one's really zeroing in on putting no time in, how can I do this in a cigar box or whatever. But I really believe that that's going to be a wave that we go through here in the near future. Okay, now let's talk about Kansas City Power. Explain to people what's going on with Kansas City Power and Light. And this is for my Kansas listeners, the Kansas listeners who have Kansas City Power and Light as a utility. There are some Kansas listeners in Olathe, Johnson County, Bonner Springs, Leavenworth, and Lawrence that are actually Kansas City Power and Light users. So this is a message that's coming to you. Okay.
So Kansas City Power and Light recently filed a rate case with the Kansas Corporation Commission, kind of in charge, the regulatory body in charge of deciding whether electric rates should go up. And in this case, KCP&L has proposed a rate increase amongst their customers to provide for energy efficiency programs. Okay. Energy efficiency programs being programs that save people electricity in their homes and hopefully save them money in the process. Now, you know, we've talked a lot about energy efficiency on this program before and how saving energy is actually the cheapest way to reduce, you know, the pollution of energy, if you will, and also to help clean up, green up our energy sector. Okay, but the question is, do we do that at the expense of increasing rates? Now, right now, a company like KCP&L and other for-profit, investor-owned utilities, the way they kind of make their returns, they make investments, whether it's transmission lines, renewable energy projects, or investments. And then they can recoup some of those costs from their customers. And in the meantime, they get maybe a 9% return to their shareholders, the initial investors of their company. Now, we, of course, support energy efficiency, but should we do so at the expense of raising rates, which already people have trouble paying their bills? You know, median income for households, about 17% of their costs come from energy in the home. That's a pretty good portion, almost a fifth of their bills are due to the energy in their homes. Are we going to make that tougher to try to save them money in the long run? That's a question we're going to have to grapple with.
It's starting to get to be pretty technical.
Right.
And the reason I wanted Zach to bring this up was because they're going to have some public hearings going on. And any of you that are living in those areas that I just mentioned that are receiving your utilities from Kansas City Power and Light, we'll try to keep you informed from this show when those hearings are going to be going on. But I think it would behoove you to take the time to learn what it is they're talking about doing.
It's going to be affecting you if you're a customer. You're going to have to be paying extra if they do pass it. If they don't pass it, you might not get the energy efficiency programs that could save you money and help the environment in the long run. So,
well, and I want the folks in Missouri to don't think you've been left out, because we're going to have a show here coming up here in a few weeks that's dealing with a solar initiative that Kansas City Power and Light is getting ready to introduce to its Missouri customers. So we'll have some people coming on to talk to you about that. It's just good, I think, for us to recognize the fact that Kansas City Power and Light, as one of the leading utilities in the Kansas City metropolitan area, is actively involved in some transformation issues going on within the company with their customers. So I'm saying, make sure you as customers pay attention to the bottom line. Pay attention. Listen to our show. Read about it when you can. But pay attention to what's going on with Kansas City Power and Light. Zach, as usual, appreciate
you,
man.
Thank you very much.
I enjoy
it's always
you
great.
Being on, and I hope you out there listening also enjoying being here. It's a up-to-date, fresh accounting of what's going on in our state, how our legislators are feeling and reacting. And I love the fact that you even bring the governor in. So yeah. Have a few words of goodbye there, and I'll let you go.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Richard, and everyone for having me on the show. Just want to tell everyone to please do get involved, learn the issues, and get involved politically. Take a little time to get involved and hear what your candidates, the people that are going to make decisions on your behalf, what they have to say.
All right. Thank you.
All right, everybody, this is Naturally. I've got a few upcoming green events for you. One is starting here at 7 o'clock, actually, and it goes until 8:30 p.m. It's the State of the State, Climate and Energy in Kansas, and they'll delve into environmental issues in the state, including fracking, renewable energy, the Clean Power Plan, energy efficiency, and water usage. Earthkeepers of Heartland Presbyterian and the Environmental Action Committee of Village Presbyterian Church are co-sponsoring this forum tonight, 7 to 8:30 p.m. It's at the Village Presbyterian Church over on 6641 Mission. So if you're in the area, you can stop in there and be a part of that, forum. On July 27th at 5:30 p.m. in Springfield, Missouri, the Evangelical Environmental Network is hosting an evening discussion with a light dinner, the Missouri Pro-Life Clean Energy Campaign. It's at Assemblies of God Theological Seminary at 1435 North Glenstone Avenue in Springfield, Missouri. Pollution harms the unborn with consequences that last a lifetime, such as brain damage and birth defects. Dirty air and water have serious consequences for the health of our children. All are invited to join in on this discussion, and you can RSVP at support@creationcare.org. And the last event I'd like to share with you is hosted by Bridging the Gap. It's a native plant sale, and everything must go. This will be tomorrow, July 26th, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. It takes place at the Hobbs Building in the Bridging the Gap office, which is 1427 West 9th Street, Suite 201. They are selling native plants that provide shelter and food for the monarch butterfly.
And thank you very much, Naturally. Just to add one quick programming note, tomorrow, because of the Democratic National Convention, Democracy Now! Will be 2 hours. The same will be on Wednesday as well as Friday. Also, some special Pacifica coverage Thursday night at 7 o'clock on the Thursday night special. We're going to go out with This Week in Water, and stay tuned for Fiesta Musical.
A climate change agreement you've never heard of could save us. That and other stories on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
The United Sweats of America? That's what news outlets are calling a massive heat wave gripping most of the country.
You probably don't need us to tell you it's been hot, but last week NASA announced that global temperatures so far this year were much higher than in the first half of 2015, and 2016 will likely be the warmest year ever recorded.
The space agency said that although El Nino caused some of the increase, the rise in temperatures since the 1960s are the result of human caused emissions of greenhouse gases.
Higher temperatures affect agriculture, drive up energy use, and raise demand for water.
And many of us will crank up the AC, but that may be part of the problem. Most air conditioners use hydrofluorocarbons, or HFCs, to cool. And when those compounds get into the atmosphere, they're thousands of times more powerful than carbon dioxide at warming the planet.
HFCs came into use when the 1987 Montreal Protocol banned CFCs that were damaging the ozone layer.
The Montreal Protocol has been called one of the most successful environmental treaties ever, but it inadvertently helped birth HFCs, a new greenhouse gas.
The good news is officials from nearly 200 countries are in Vienna this week to amend the Montreal Protocol to limit HFCs.
Passing the amendment looks very likely and will do much to fast-track goals set by the Paris climate talks last December.
That's because, unlike the Paris Agreement, any amendment to the Montreal Protocol is legally binding in almost every country. And according to experts, a law limiting HFCs could result in the removal of over 100 gigatons of carbon from entering the atmosphere.
While this is extremely positive news for the planet, what's even more exciting is that industry is very much on board and already developing HFC alternatives.
The Olympics in Rio will open on August 5th, but the Games have been mired in controversy, including concerns about water.
For starters, the Australian team has decided not to live in the Olympic Village because of things like no running water in some apartments, sewage leaking into showers, toilets that don't flush, and flooding in bathrooms.
And recently, scientists found superbacteria near beaches that will host Olympic swimming events and in a lagoon where rowing and canoe races will take place.
To deal with contamination, the lone American female kayaker, Maggie Hogan, said that they will try to waterproof her uniform, and she'll wash her hands and shower after each event. She said she will not take a water bottle in her boat for fear it could come in contact with bacteria.
Brazil's promise to clean up waterways and remove 80% of sewage flowing into the bay where sailors will compete. But David Zee, an oceanographer who has studied Rio's waters for decades, told the Washington Post that in this aspect, Rio is a failure.
The Democratic National Convention occurs this week in Philadelphia, and many are hoping that climate change will receive some attention in contrast to its absence at the Republican convention.
As the Democrats convene, a new study shows that by 2040, rising seas and future storms are likely to flood the city of brotherly love to a depth of 4 feet or more above current high tide levels.
In a little more than 20 years, almost 9 square miles of the city are likely to be flooded, according to the Climate Central study, including Philadelphia International Airport that sits along the Delaware River. Something for delegates to consider as they fly in.
There's already concern that the flooding is occurring more frequently. Ben Strauss, one of the lead authors of the study, told State Impact that data shows 5 of the 10 biggest floods in Philly since 1915 have occurred in the last 6 years.
The efforts of those who want to build a nuclear power plant near Green River, Utah, got a boost last week.
An appellate court ruled that the planned project can take nearly 55,000 acre-feet of water from the Green River to cool the facility.
Plans to use the water had been challenged by environmental groups, including Heal Utah. They argued that the use of the water would be contrary to the public good, unsustainable, and infeasible. But the court disagreed, basically saying that there was plenty of water to use.
The Green is part of the Colorado River system that supplies drinking water to about 40 million people, including those in LA, Phoenix, and Las Vegas.
People concerned with the health of this vast water system note that Lake Mead is already at its lowest level since it was first filled, and Lake Powell, further upriver, is only 55% full.
And finally, speaking of rivers, it wasn't that long ago that swimming in the Charles River in Boston would get you two things. One, a hefty fine, and two, a need for a tetanus shot.
The river was so filthy that people said you could find everything from old cars to corpses flowing through the muck.
In 1995, the EPA launched the Clean Charles Initiative. The agency gave letter grades to rivers in America, and the poor Charles got a D, which meant that the water was okay for some boating, but definitely not swimming.
But oh, how times have changed. Last week, nearly 300 people plunged into the Charles during an event now in its third year. According to the Charles River Conservancy, in 2013, the river was given an A-, and now is one of the cleanest rivers in North America.
So, now that the river is cleaner, would you drink it?
6 Massachusetts breweries hope you will. They're competing to brew the best Charles River beer to raise awareness about the waterway and make it swimmable all year round.
Not to worry, although the water will come from the river, it will be treated with an advanced purification system before it reaches your stein.
If the Charles continues to get cleaner, will Red Sox fans need to sing a new tune about purdy water?
This Week in Water is sponsored by the American Water Works Association. Looking for solutions to utility challenges? Get answers at AWWA's Water Infrastructure Conference and Expo, October 30th through November 2nd. Learn more at awwa.org/H2O Infocon. Well, I love that dirty water.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI. Kansas City Community Radio.